and welcome to Broken But Glorious. I'm Chris Lappin, and joining me this week, I've got the Heavenly Bodies, Gigolo, Nick Davey.
Good evening.
And Casanova, Oliver Newman.
How you doing this evening? Hello, Casanova. That's good. Yeah. Hello.
How you doing this evening, lads?
Yeah, good. Thanks.
I want to ring an announcement like David Starr. To go on for 5 minutes, I think, in future.
I want to ring in just like Paul London.
So before we get into the news, Nick, you went to the recent Riptide show. Do you want to tell us about it?
Already off to a fire. Mullet Man was back.
Yay!
He hasn't followed
us back on Twitter. I'm very disappointed.
Oh, I'll have to tell us a word next time. So Mullet Man was back, which meant this match is scheduled for one submission, one knockout, two to determine a winner. No, you don't need to repeat that. Mullet Man was back, which is excellent. But in general, a really good show, enjoyable from start to finish, and with no fire alarm this week as well. So the standout match is obviously the main event, Jimmy Abbott versus Matt Riddle versus Keith Lee. Entertaining as expected, including Jimmy Abbott. Before the match even started, Jimmy Abbott jumping on the top rope through a table outside the ring, foreshadowing what's the fucking point or something. So that was that. Also a good match between there was an all corners match. It was Session Moth and referee Shane versus Big T Justice and his tag team partner, who I did the wrestling training with, but I forgot his name, versus the Aussie Open, versus Damien Dunn.
Yeah.
And his tag team partner, which I don't know his name, which was a very enjoyable match. There was also Damon Moser versus Spike Trevette, which was a great match, which then also leads on to the later on in the match, Jack Sexsmith had a match against someone, I've forgotten his name. But then after the match, most noticeably after the match, great match though nonetheless, after the match, Damon Moser turned heel, him and Spike Trevette attacking Sexsmith and appeared to have broken his ankle,
wow,
which is just horrible. They're the sort of standout match. Oh, and also Chris Brooks versus Chuck Mambo during the match, of which when Mambo's beach balls were getting flying around outside, I teed myself up on the volley, hit Chris Brooks in the head. He in response got the ball, tried to lever it at me, then I ducked and ducked again. He was obviously faking to hit it at me several times, making me look like a right tit. But then they were in a shot, but it then smacked the person next to me full pelt in the face. So. Enjoyable show.
That sounds really cool.
Oh, and also Dahlia Black versus Candy Floss was also a great match, which actually opened the show as well.
Yeah, sounds fun. Also on Sunday was Impact Wrestling's biggest show of the year. Nick, you didn't watch any of it, did you? You didn't watch any of Bound for Glory?
No. Who main evented? Sting versus Ric Flair.
Oliver, you watched the whole thing. I watched the first few matches before I fell asleep, but then watched the last few matches the morning after. The six-way match for the Impact X Division Championship was probably my match of the night. Garza Jr. is quickly becoming one of my favourite wrestlers. Oliver, do you think this match?
Yeah, I think that match was... it was like a X Division match of old. They've got the talent, and it's just building a storyline around it again is the key thing. But in terms of sprint match, that was a really good match. And you said about Garza Jr., the fact that he was wrestling with one arm was a lot of respect for him for doing that.
My favorite spot of the match was when it was five faces against Trevor Lee, basically. where he got super kicked, four people super kicked him at the same time. It's amazing.
I think with Trevor Lee though, it's like the Miz with the IC title, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
He's an amazing X Division champion. You want everyone who wrestles him to beat him, much like the Miz with the IC title. So he's really good in his role.
Yeah, he's a fella I think WWE should be looking at to bring into the Cruiserweight division.
Absolutely. gotta get the X Division title off him and stuff. But yeah, if he was to ever become a free agent, he would fit right in the 205 Live.
Yeah, the second match was Ishimori versus Tyson Dax.
Dukes.
It's an okay match. Nothing memorable happened.
It was more about Laurel Van Ness, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
Which is a shame because, obviously, Tyson Dukes is a veteran on the independent scene, and Taiji Ishimori's, you know, one of Japan's best wrestlers, isn't he? So, it was a shame that it was more about a storyline outside the match. But it, like I said on the Twitter when I was live tweeting it, it was a fine match. I think they were just told to go and have a good match, really. And given the calibre of talent in the ring, there was never any doubt in that.
Yeah, because this was a late replacement. It was meant to be Valkyrie versus Rosemary in a First Blood match, but Valkyrie couldn't get a visa or something, I think. I haven't read the full story.
I'm not sure, to be honest. I just switched it on. I mean, Spike TV, as you know as well from the reports, the cuts, the things that they cut out of the show, I don't think it mattered after the event, but because like obviously Alberto El Patron was there, and he was like, and then when it got to like the main event, I'm thinking, okay, well, when's he going to do anything? And then it all kind of came to fruition what he was going to do, but the promo that was cut out of the show might have actually been important, you know, in terms of it shouldn't have been cut out, really.
Every review I heard of it just said it was long and boring, the promo.
Yeah, I can understand that, but from what the report that I read, it kind of explains why he did what he did.
Hmm.
So it looks like he's got a motivation. If you're online, you've read what's happened online and stuff, but what if you haven't?
Hmm.
So that's the way I looked at it.
I thought the Monster Ball match between Abyss and Grado was a bit of a botch fest. It was probably about 10 minutes too long. I kind of expect more from these two wrestlers. So.
Grado!
I think, you know, it was a storyline match again, really. It did what it said it was going to do. It was brutal, it was violent, it was bloody. And that's what a Monster's Ball match is, really. I mean, I couldn't tell you the competitors at this moment in time, but apart from one or two Monster's Ball matches that's kind of jumped out and they were really, really, really good, the other ones were brutal, violent and bloody, and that's what's to be expected from that match, really. It was enjoyable for what it was.
Yeah, I think it was over 20 minutes
long. And obviously, sorry Chris, Rosemary wasn't in the First Blood match, but she was a part of the match and you know, trying to help Grado to win and stuff, and then the storyline going back for Decay and the fact that Abyss and Rosemary were in the same group. So yeah, I think it was a good storyline based match, really.
Yeah, me and my son have a running joke with Abyss, because whenever he's on screen, we're like, guess what, Joel, I interviewed him. And over the years, Joel's starting to get more and more annoyed because I do it every time he comes on screen.
And the lack of Father James Mitchell as well, that wasn't good. I like him, he's a really good manager.
Alright, so this is the point where I fell asleep, so Oliver, you'll have to take over. Team Impact versus Team AAA.
I don't blame you for falling asleep. Not because of what was going on in the ring. I myself felt pretty tired at this point. This match was just about whether Ethan Carter could get along with James Storm and Eddie Edwards. For the longest time, he would like refuse tags and things, and he wouldn't tag into the match. He wouldn't take part in the match, and then he took a tag, and it kind of broke down from there. Eddie Edwards took Phantasma's finish on the ring apron, and that looked really, really painful. And then Ethan Carter was able to get the win for the team. And then, so that was just, once again, storyline-wise. Because I haven't watched Impact and I just went into Bound for Glory, I'm not sure what the storyline is. but as a standalone match and the story in the match, it was a good match. Obviously, with the three Impact stars not knowing a couple of the AAA stars, obviously Phantasma because he's been in the company when he used to watch Impact and stuff. It was a good match storyline wise. It was progressed and it all will lead to something in the future. Although there's been rumours that, you know, James Storm might be finishing up and stuff, so I don't know if it actually will.
Yeah, that was my next. There's rumours that James Storm and DC3's contracts are both up soon, so bring in Nick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, bring in Nick here. So, Nick, would you like to see Storm and, I don't know whether he'll be Derek Bateman again back in the WWE?
Sorry, one second, Nick. They said about Storm retiring, so it might just be about EC3.
Did James Storm, he had a bit of an NXT run, didn't he?
I think he had two matches, and then he went back to TNA.
So no, it would be good to see him have a proper NXT run. Obviously, before, as Oliver said, before he retires. Derek Bateman, I'm not sure whether he'll be any good in WWE.
I think if they brought in a similar character to the EC3.
I think as something like EC3 is money for WWE. There's no doubt if he went back a second time, they'd capitalise on it this time round. He's been one of the shining lights in a really difficult era for TNA, Global Force Wrestling, Impact Wrestling, you know, all rolled into one. He's been one of the stars, hasn't he?
Derek Bateman.
Right, next up was the tag team championships between OVE and LAX. Again,
yeah,
I didn't see this one.
this was a really good tag match again. Some of the moves and stuff, the powerbomb off the stage was quite crazy. Really well executed. I think the major thing was Sami Callihan helping OVE to retain the tag titles. So
when he did his run in, the crowd was dead. They just didn't know who he was.
Yeah, it was surprising for me because if you go back to the start of the show with the six way, they were hot. And I was like, wow, this crowd's gonna be amazing. And then
was that Alberto? Was that promo by Alberto for half an hour?
Yeah, that's probably the reason why Spike cut it out, then, I guess. But you look at the in the show to this point, and you're thinking the match was obviously good, the six way, and obviously Peter Williams was in the match, and obviously that's a home country guy and stuff. But I thought this was another good match, and it was a 51-50 street fight, and really, really well executed. Again, it's like, you know, it was a good match. I enjoyed it.
Then it was the Impact Knockouts Championship, Gail Kim's retirement match.
Yeah, just I think in this instance, just surprising that she won the title. It was a good match in terms of, I'd not seen enough of Ali to really comment on her wrestling ability. And a big fan of Sienna. I think she's fantastic. And then obviously Gail Kim is one of the reasons why, there's so much respect for women's wrestling. Her feud with Awesome Kong way back when is in TNA was the reason why I wanted to watch women's wrestling as a support as well, as opposed to anything else. And obviously Trish Stratus and Mickey James and stuff. So, but it was the Knockouts, it was the Gail Kims and the Awesome Kongs that kind of revolutionised women's wrestling. So to see her win the title and as she heads towards retirement is pretty cool, in all honesty. And she deserves every single second of this limelight. She's an amazing in-ring wrestler.
You meant to lose your last match. So that's the rules.
But they've said like towards the end of the year. They've said the end of the year, though, haven't they? So there's still some TV tapings, aren't there? Before
I thought this was their last match.
That's the confusing thing. I don't know. They're saying it's the last band for glory. That's what they kind of went with after they'd said that. And it was like, okay, well, you've covered your backs. And then there's obviously TV tapings until 2018. So she'll lose the title before then, unless, you know, God forbid they, you know, they retire the Knockouts title. Yeah. Although, you know, for somebody who's it's meant so much to, you could understand why they do that, but for the sake of the company and the prestige of the title and everything for the females on the roster, you know, she needs to lose it before she retires and keep it in the company.
Right, next up was the Steel Cage tag team match between Bobby Lashley and Prince Mo. King Mo, is it? It says Prince Mo here.
King.
I took this straight from Wikipedia, so I don't know why it says Prince Mo on Wikipedia.
Because it's from Wikipedia.
Defeated Moose and Stephen Bauer. Bonner?
Bonner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know who these MMA people are. I don't watch MMA. Bit of a messy match. I think it was only 10 minutes long, so it was what it was. It was decent, but it was a bit of a mess, I thought. But I enjoyed it.
Go on. Sorry, Chris.
I enjoyed it. The build was... Let's wait till King Mo and Steve Bonner to have a pretend MMA fight in the middle.
Yeah.
But because, for what it was enjoyable. But yeah.
Sorry, like I said on Twitter, I enjoyed the wrestling and the MMA parts of it because I felt that they kind of balanced each other well. It kept everything interesting. Just with this storyline, though, it's like, is anyone allowed to put their hands on this? Is it Adam Lambert?
Dan Lambert.
Is it Adam Lambert, the guy who does the training?
Dan Lambert.
Dan Lambert, sorry.
Adam Lambert's the lead singer of Queen.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Dan Lambert, the American top team head honcho, and he gets involved in everything, but yeah. No one gets anywhere near him. And I'm just thinking to myself, well, you know, when are you going to actually... Because it's him, he's the one that needs to be dealt with, and no one goes anywhere near him. So if the storyline and the ending to the storyline is him getting his comeuppance, it'd be really cool to see. But if it isn't, it's a bit of a, I don't know, because he's slagged off professional wrestling, he's brought his guys in and stuff. Yeah, strange one.
Yeah.
But I just want to say at this point, Moose... Jeez, that guy is quite incredible to watch.
I enjoy Moose.
Yeah.
Me and my son do like doing the Moose dance as he comes to the ring. Moose.
Well, no, but just the way he scaled the cage, and it's incredible athlete.
Right, then the main event for the championship was Eli Drake with Chris Masters. Chris Adonis, I think he's called, is it?
Chris, yeah, he used to be called Chris.
Versus John Morrison. Well, they call him Johnny Impact, which must be the laziest name ever. What should we call him? Johnny Impact.
But when you're announcing Eli Drake...
Johnny Wrestling.
The name aside, you know what you get with John Morrison or Johnny Mundo. He's a athlete, isn't he? So he was called Johnny Nitro, you know what I mean? Yeah. Names don't tend to matter. It's kind of what the wrestler can do in the ring.
I just don't like it. Johnny Impact. Like, what can really work out with Impact? So what did you think of the match overall? Before we move on to
I enjoyed it. It felt like a main event match. It felt like everything in the card was kind of leading to the main event match, which is how it was, years ago, kind of thing. Whereas before, you know, when it was AJ and Daniels and Samoa Joe and stuff in the X Division, there was always, can you top this? And the main event would always fall short. It feels like this incarnation of Impact Wrestling is like trying to make sure the main event is the, you know, the best thing on the show and stuff. But with Eli Drake, who is, you know, basically reminds me of Stone Cold Steve Austin in terms of mannerisms and how he talks, like a young, you know, stunning Steve Austin kind of thing.
I've also seen him compared to Young Rock as well, but I don't see it.
Yeah, the way he carries himself as a champion is, I said as soon as I saw him and he started doing the dummy thing, I was like, that guy's going to be champion one day, and it happened sooner than I expected. Like I said, match-wise, it was a good match. Some of the things were amazing. Johnny going underneath the guardrail, sliding underneath the guardrail, was an incredible piece of athleticism.
Mm.
And the match was just moving along, and then all night I'd wondered what had happened to Alberto El Patron, and all of a sudden, out of the crowd, steel chair, and he, kind of ended the match, so that's what happened to him.
Yeah, I was clicking, I was like, it says there's only 2 minutes left, but it doesn't seem like there's only 2 minutes left of this match, so what's going to happen? And then, came out, jumped out the crowd.
So. No, once again, I've said this a lot during this review of Bound for Glory and stuff, but yeah, just another good match. It's a really good, solid show. I've seen reports online and stuff, and they don't say anything like that, but in terms of enjoyment, I enjoyed this from start to finish. I don't think I'm going to watch Impact every week, but I don't watch WWE every week. So, but when the pay-per-views come around, I'll give them a watch.
You know, the lawyer has a lot of bad habits, but only ones that help me survive. Don't deprive yourself of the full power. Be a survivor. Don't smoke.
We'll do a few more stories before we get into our top five big man champions. So what a week. We had Jericho Omega announced for Wrestle Kingdom. We had Triple H team with The Shield, and then showing up on random ICW shows with Pete Dunne. We had The Undertaker ordering Subway in a Young Bucks t-shirt, which I'm sure Vinnie Max loved. But
I didn't even know about that one.
Turned out it was photoshopped. He had a gun with an American flag or something on his t-shirt. But the Young Bucks loved it, and they'll tweet it out everywhere. So it's Photoshop. But first, Emma, along with Darren Young and Summer Rae, have been released. I love it. Were you shocked by this news? Especially with the Emma.
Thanks, Nick. I'm livid by this news, to be honest. Let's just take a second for the people who were released before Emma. Summer Rae and Darren Young both, good at...
Were they injured, just come back from injury and then get released? So were they just waiting for them to get fit before they could release them for, so there wasn't any bad press? Right?
You don't know, do you? But the fact that they weren't used for the longest time makes it somewhat understandable that they were released, although it's horrible for anyone to lose their job.
Hmm.
And then obviously there's a couple of releases from NXT as well. Did you catch those ones, Chris?
It's Sawyer Fulton and the Chinese wrestler, I can't remember his name. But he's been out injured and just come back. Both of them have just come back from injury.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm thinking, is it that we can't release them when they're injured? Let's wait for them to be fit.
Yeah, I think, fair play to Sawyer Fulton. I saw his tweet after he was released. And wish him the best of luck, in all honesty. He said, he wants to be a wrestler. He was put on the earth to be a wrestler and stuff. So he's got the fire under him. We'll have to keep an eye on that one. But yeah, the major shock was Emma. I can't believe it, to be honest. The way she was put across against Asuka in both matches is not like someone who would be released. She could have been the cornerstone of the women's division. If you go back to NXT, it was her matches against Paige from the NXT Women's Title Tournament final, which I think was the July, and then definitely from NXT Arrival, fantastic match there. Those are two matches where the women's matches went over like 5 minutes, 10 and 15, I think, respectively. And if it wasn't for those matches, then the Sasha Bankses and the Baileys would have had to work even harder to get the opportunities that they got. So I think, from that perspective, they could have built the division around Emma. I think she's one of the best female wrestlers on the roster, if not the best. if you, you know, you could have had her as a female wrestler, you could have moved her to SmackDown and made her Zack Ryder's valet if he was to turn into a villain, which would have, I think would have been fantastic. There was so much you could have done. I think the key thing though is she's not going to be short of bookings and living life on her own kind of terms. The only thing is, obviously, because it's been talked about online and stuff, the relationship with somebody in the company, it, you know, might be difficult to carry on outside of it, which will be a shame.
Yeah, she's already tweeted out that she can take bookings from the 1st of February.
Yeah, so I think she'll be fine in the long run. She's got to live her dream, but it's, you know, I just didn't feel like it needed to come to an end. She, like I said, could have been the cornerstone of Eva Division quite easily.
Nick?
Yeah, no, I agree with a lot of the comments there. Obviously, first and foremost, yeah, as Oliver said, it's disappointing when anyone loses their job. Darren Young and Summer Rae, you can kind of understand it. They've been used a lot, obviously, the injury thing. I don't know about that. Obviously, we don't know. See, it's behind the scenes stuff. Darren Young, fair play. I mean, he's had a really good career. I mean, obviously, he started off at the NXT, obviously, with the big Nexus angle. And then, obviously, he had the story on where he was kicked out. And that never really got on anywhere because he came out of that promo, I think, on Raw once and he said he was going to be the missing link.
Yeah.
But I think he got RKO'd and that was that.
with Darren Young being released, was that mean the only original Nexus member? Is he Slater?
I think so. Yeah. It would probably be, yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't include that, Daniel Bryan's the only active wrestler now.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have thought that when the Nexus came on, so that Heath Slater would be the last one standing.
Well, no, I thought the one that was going to go on would be the Brock Barrett, would obviously, you'd have tipped to be the biggest star, but apart from that, probably Gabriel. They're probably the two biggest ones that you thought were going to go on, but, yeah, with him, and also fair play, he came out as gay as well, which full credit to him for doing. Obviously, in such a big organisation and everything and what have you, and obviously you don't really hear too many wrestlers doing so. So there was that. Obviously, he had the new storyline with Bob Backlund, never really got going, which is a shame, because it could have been pretty good.
Yeah, every time it seems to get going, he got injured.
Yeah, it's a shame. But no, but yeah, it's the major one. Emma, really can't get my head around that. As I said, obviously she put on a very good matches with Oscar, and booked pretty strong in both matches, given the up against this wrecking ball of a woman who's Davidson. She's obviously going to look as strong as possible. So they could have easily done Emma and made her look as weak as anything. But no, they gave her a good chip going. So it really was surprising. And said, so, no, I thought she's been booked pretty well. I thought they could have definitely made her into a future women's future champion on both shows. She could be right at the top of the order. She's a great wrestler. So it's a real shame. She also has comedy as well about her, so she's got quite a lot of everything going for her. But it's a shame that's caught a lot of people by surprise, that release.
I also wanted to touch on the amazing card being assembled by New Japan for Wrestle Kingdom 12. Two matches were added this weekend. Firstly, Kenny Omega's challenge was answered by Chris Jericho. And this match will be for the new United States Heavyweight Championship.
I can't believe that. So, I mean, presumably Jericho still is kind of under contract with WWE, is he? Or?
Probably he's a free agent. He's free agent. He just comes and goes as he pleases, basically.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I don't think WWE will really care as well. I think it's going to be quite a cool one-off match. I mean, it's got me excited for it. I think Jericho's good, cool, and still doing that when he's still in good condition as well. No, I think that'll be class. I really can't wait for that, and it's going to certainly get me enrolled.
I have one match at Wrestle Kingdom, I have the rematch at WrestleMania. Oh, actually, no, because Nick's going there live.
Yeah.
We don't want it to be too good.
They could have Jericho win here, win the championship, and then New Japan are going doing a United States tour in California, like they did last year. So they could have him win the title back then.
You could have him win it back in WrestleMania week, maybe, if they do a show.
Possibly. And then the other match announced was Cody Rhodes versus Kota Ibushi for the Ring of Honor World Championship.
That's both matches are incredible, in all honesty. You know, I've seen snippets of New Japan since the Wrestling Channel went off the air, so I don't watch it as much as I could and possibly should. I've seen Kenny Omega against, apologies if I don't say the name right, Kushida Okada?
Okada, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I saw the
six-star match.
Yeah, Wrestle Kingdom 11 match, and actually thought that Omega should have won the title, because I was more impressed with him.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's got me, and obviously Nick, the enthusiasm from him. You know, I think those two matches are just amazing standout matches.
I think the match that I think is going to steal the show is the Fatal 4-Way for the Junior Heavyweight Championship. It's the villain Mark Skill versus Takahashi versus Kushida versus Will Ospreay.
Jeez.
Oh, my God.
That's the match I'm most looking forward to. We haven't gone to the main event yet.
I was going to say, in terms of any of the three, you could look forward to when you're Jericho versus Amiga's Winnipeg versus Winnipeg. And obviously they've talked about being the best. Kota Ibushi against Rhodes should be amazing. And the four-way, you've just said, it could be incredible as well.
So looking at the two main events from this show, it's Okada versus Naito, which is going to be an amazing match as well, and Omega versus Jericho. And then the rumoured main events for WrestleMania, which is Brock versus Reigns and Jinder versus Cena. I don't know. Are you actually excited for the WrestleMania match, which is once you've seen this card?
No, not at all.
I didn't even mention that the Young Bucks are also on this show, and they're in a junior tag team match against Roppongi 3K.
Who's Roppongi 3K?
The tag team they're against. I don't know what they're... I can't remember what the wrestlers are called.
Yeah, I've never heard of that version. I've heard of Roppongi voice.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of Roppongi 3K.
Yes.
I think we'll all be tuning in for Wrestle Kingdom, won't we, lads?
Yeah.
When is it again? January?
January 4th.
It's like, how many dollars is it a month?
It's 999 yen, which is $10, I think.
You can spare $10 for Wrestle Kingdom, Nick. Just cancel it after that month.
I'll just find Duddy String.
There's always one.
Right.
Sorry, no, I didn't mean that. Sorry, take that off the egg.
Right, now it's time.
Please, Nick.
I'm sorry.
I'll bring up Sky tomorrow when I'm on my lunch and tell them to put it on.
I don't think Sky put a New Japan Pro Wrestling show on for you.
Send them an email.
Okay. Yeah.
Hi, this is Dave Mercy, owner of Pro Wrestling Chaos, and you're listening to Broken But Glorious.
Right, now it's time to discover who you ranked as the top five big man champions since 1990. Thanks for everyone who sent in their top fives. So
you're welcome.
Fucking off your butt.
Well done, Nick.
Well, 20 people sent them in, so they ended up having 100 points out of.
I relied on everyone else to bail me out. I'm doing football, I used to do classwork in college, and driving, and everything.
Right, so it's a quality. To qualify, the wrestler needed to be held a world title in either WWE, WCW, or ECW, and be either 6'8" plus or over 350 pounds. And at number five is the 2-time WWF champion Yokozuna.
Right.
He got 36 points out of 100.
When it comes to being a monster and the age that I watched Yokozuna, yeah. He was scary and, pretty good for a big man.
Very agile for a big man.
Very agile. That's good.
I'm afraid he was a bit before my time.
When were you born, Nick?
1994.
Yeah. 93, he won his first championship.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he won the Royal Rumble in 93, and he was the first person to, where the rule was, you'd go on to WrestleMania as a face champion if you won the Royal Rumble. So at WrestleMania 9, he wrestled Bret Hart for the championship, won it, immediately challenged Hulk Hogan to a match and lost it.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately lost
him. That booking.
And then, at the time, Yokozuna held the record for the shortest amount of time since your debut to win the championship was 173 days. His second reign, he won the title back at King of the Ring against Hulk Hogan when a Japanese photographer's camera exploded in Hulk Hogan's face, which allowed Yokozuna to leg drop Hulk Hogan to win the title back.
Mm-hmm. That was a unique ending to a match at the time.
It was, yeah. And they saw it as a...
Nothing to do with politics or anything.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan couldn't lose clean, but they forced that because he lost with a leg drop. It was kind of how Hulk Hogan was putting him over by letting him win with his move. That was kind of the thought behind it.
That was nice.
And Hulk Hogan didn't want to lose to a smaller man in Bret Hart, so that's why they had to go back to Yokozuna to eventually get it back to Bret Hart.
He didn't want to lose to a better wrestler than Bret Hart.
He said he didn't want to lose to a smaller man.
I think you got it right the first time, Chris.
Right, so highlights of his reign was Lex Luger body slamming him on the USS Intrepid, which set up the whole Lex Express summer storyline, if you remember that. So.
I loved it every second.
And the match at SummerSlam, which ended in a count-out victory for Lex, but they celebrated like he'd won the Second World War. It was balloons and streamers, and it's like, you haven't won anything. All the faces came down and put him on the shoulders, and they're like, you won by count out.
That was a big deal at the time.
His next challenger was against The Undertaker. He faced in a casket match. After a lengthy match, all the heels, about a dozen heels, came down and helped Yokozuna attack The Undertaker and then get him to the casket. And then then The Undertaker disappeared for 6 months.
Was that the Ascension? No. Not the Ascension tag team that we know today, but the one where he ascended.
Yes.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah, it would be better if it was the Ascension that we have today.
Right, so then Lex Luger and Bret Hart both simultaneously won the Royal Rumble in 94, which set up WrestleMania 10, where he faced Lex Luger first and won the match against Lex Luger, to then later face up Bret Hart, where he lost the title to Bret Hart.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
and this time Hulk Hogan did turn up.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a pretty. It was a 280-day reign, so that's pretty. It's pretty good for a second reign. So considering it was minutes, the first reign. So.
But like I said, it's it's good big man champion, and look at the people that he was able to work with. Bret Hart twice at WrestleMania, and I'm sure dozen. Or more times on house shows and things of that nature. So, it's dependent on who's working with it, really. I'm sure he's worked probably like Shawn Michaels and stuff. So, a good big man and a good so-called small man always leads to a good match.
Yeah, after that, he basically became a tag team wrestler. He won the title a couple of times with different partners.
Including Bret's brother.
Yeah, Owen Hart, yeah. Right, so at number four, you voted for the son of the Andre the Giant, the Big Show, or the Giant, or Paul White, or whatever. He's been under multiple names over the year. Big Show is a two-time WWE/WWF champion, one-time ECW world champion, two-time world heavyweight champion, and two-time WCW world heavyweight champion. He was the first professional wrestler ever to hold the WWE Championship, WCW Championship, and ECW Championship.
And he won the WCW title on his debut.
Yes, that was my next line, yeah.
Sorry, Chris.
It actually says he won his WCW title.
I didn't want it to look like you've done all the research and me and Nick have just turned up, which is probably what's happened.
Yeah, so as you said... He won the WCW title on his debut, defeating Hulk Hogan as part of the awful Dungeon of Doom storyline. He was stripped of the title a week later because of the controversial finish to that match. He regained the title, defeating Ric Flair after Hogan formed the New World Order. He then defeated the Giants for the title at Hog Wild, following interference from Scott Hall and Kevin Nash.
Oh, God.
His four reigns in the WWE weren't that eventful, so I didn't make many notes on that. But do you have any memories of his?
I liked his run. I liked his world title run in 2012. Yeah. I thought he had a really great match with Sheamus at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It was quite a good feud, actually, with Sheamus as well. I thought that's the one in recent memory. Well, I think that's probably the last major belt he held. I don't think he's held it since then, has he?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, which I thought was really good. Then, obviously, dropped the belt to Brian, I think, when he had the cash in. Oh, yeah, I liked his feud there with Sheamus. He had the run with the feud with Sheamus.
With the feud with Sheamus, is that when he used when Sheamus used the big chair on him?
Yeah, that was true. No, because they had a good match when he actually won the belt at Hell in a Cell, which was just a normal matchup. Then at Survivor Series, I think it was a disqualification. Then I think they ended up having a chairs match at TLC, if memory serves me correct. But yeah, the match at Hell in a Cell, probably the normal match was quality. It was a really good match, finishes a lot, and obviously pinfalls, near pinfalls, etc. He had quite a good run there with the belt in 2012. Quite a good feud with Sheamus as a whole. I'm trying to think of some of his other runs with the belt. I know he had that one in 2000, obviously, when he had Heyman with him, when he beat Lesnar at Survivor Series 2002, and Heyman turned on Lesnar.
Yeah,
Survivor Series 2002.
One of the best Survivor Series of all time.
Yeah, it was an incredible show.
And obviously, had the ECW run in 2006. Less said about that, the better, because obviously that led to a lot of arguments at the top with Heyman.
Yeah, as I said, he won the ECW championship from RVD, and the fans almost rioted.
Yeah.
They were throwing drinks and empty cups in the ring as they celebrated. And the match has been known as the South Philly Screwjob.
Well, that's what made Heyman effectively leave, isn't it? Yeah. I think it was more the December to Dismember where he actually lost the belt to Bobby Lashley in that
probably the worst Elimination Chamber match ever.
Yeah.
I think it's because Heyman wants, I know we're going a bit off topic here, I know Heyman wanted Punk to win the whole thing.
Yeah.
That was rejected. Then he said, okay, Punk needs to eliminate the Big Show. That was rejected, I think.
Yeah. And
then Heyman said, bye-bye.
Well, the fact that there was two matches announced is the reason why it's one of the worst grossing pay-per-views, because, you know, you don't know what the pay-per-view is going to be about. There's no reason to order it or watch it, is there? So,
you're telling me that you don't want to start till 4 a.m. to find out what the five filler matches are going to be?
No, that's exactly what I'm telling you, Nick.
I dream of a pay-per-view of filler matches, but it's like you could have potentially Heath Slater versus Kurt Hawkins.
Are we going back to
that? We actually got that, didn't we, a couple of months ago?
Yeah, that was the co-main event, wasn't it?
It was actually a filler match.
No, that was the match that was on whilst Roman Reigns was killing Braun Strowman and the ambulance.
Whilst I was making all the murder.
See, that's what I was thinking. It wasn't necessary to the title reign, but am I right in thinking that the Big Show and Roman Reigns had a really amazing... some kind of stipulation. Last man standing match, yeah. That was a wicked match.
Well, a lot of people were saying that's when maybe Big Show should have, because I know he was getting a few Please Retire chants around, so those people were saying maybe he should have actually retired after that amazing match with Reigns. But fair play to the Big Show at the moment. So I think he's at a great point in his career where he's got genuine respect by the fans. I mean, when he comes out, there's genuine people like him because he's done his bit for the business. The kids love him. People like myself will like him because he's done so much for the business.
Mm-hmm.
They like him, Nick, because look what he's been tutoring Braun Strowman, hasn't he? And you can.
I respect him so much for getting that shape there to put Strowman over. Actually, you have genuinely good matches as well with Strowman for getting into that shape to help put Strowman over. And I think he's at a good point now in his career where I think he's going to be coming back next year for a bit. If he can help keep putting people over, he's tried it at Big Cass as well. I don't think people are going to mind it. So you don't want him on Raw every week. You don't want to build big things around him. But if he can just be sort of just make the odd appearance there, I think that would be good. I think he's at a good point in his career.
I think when it's all said and done, highly underrated big man for what he can actually do in the ring and what he's been able to do since 1995. It's quite incredible, really.
Alright, so then at number three, you voted for the three-time WCW World Heavyweight Champion, Big Van Vader.
Good choice.
Unfortunately, none of us watched WCW in 92.
Osprey.
It's wondering what you was doing then, Nick, and then I finally caught on.
So as none of us watched, I'll quickly go through his title reigns and then we'll...
Well, I saw his matches with Cactus Jack, to be fair, but, you know... WCW was hard to track down in the 90s, Chris.
As I say, none of us watched it in 92, so...
Yeah.
So he won it for the first... He won it for the first time from Sting at the Great American Bash, 1992. He'd lose it 3 weeks later to Ron Simmons. WWE recognised Ron Simmons, this title reign from Ron Simmons, as the first black wrestler to win the championship. Vader would win the title back four months later at a house show. He'd then lose it to Sting the following March, and then win it back 6 days later in a house show in Dublin. He'd hold the title for 285 days before losing it to Ric Flair at Starrcade's 10th anniversary in a title versus career match. And that was the end of his titles. Well, he became US champion after that. In the WWF, he had one title match. Do you remember it? All of it?
Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam 96.
Well, he was meant to win it, and then they'd feud throughout the autumn with Michaels winning it back at Survivor Series, but then after that match, Michaels just refused to work with him. Again, he said it was too rough. And him and the Click had a bit of sway back, a bit of stage back then. So.
Yeah, that's a bit of an understatement. So, no, but once again, Vader, amazing big man, can move... You know, like a cruiserweight back in the day, and obviously hit like a heavyweight. Mm. I remember a match with Ken Shamrock where they just beat the Harley Vidua. That was pretty surreal to watch on one of those in your houses where the rest of the card was pretty dire, apart from the main event, which I'm guessing either had a combination of Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels in the main event, but Shamrock and Vader beat the Harley with Chua. This might have been later actually. They might have before, but obviously that might be 98, so I'm wrong in terms of Bret Hart because obviously he was gone. Vader, just a tremendous wrestler. Should have won the title from Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam 96. Really enjoyed that match and felt he was highly underused in the WWE, but elsewhere, WCW and obviously Japan as well. He got the respect that he deserved for the skill and technique that he's always had.
Yeah. Yeah. And most members in Japan for that match he had with Stan Hansen where he popped his eye out.
And he's obviously remembered in WCW for the match with Cactus Jack where... Yeah. Yeah, thoroughly lost an ear.
Yeah.
So, I guess bad things happen in matches with Vader.
Number two, you voted for the Christmas creature himself, known these days as Kane.
So. Oh, I wondered who he was talking about.
Yeah, before he got to WWE, he had loads of weird gimmicks. Christmas creature was one of them.
Unibomb, was it?
Yeah, it was Unibomb, he was Doomsday, he was...
Yeah.
So Nick, what are your favourite memories of Kane?
Early memories of Kane. I remember his feud with Jericho in 2000 over a cup of coffee. I was a bit appalled when he actually burst onto the scene. I know I've seen some clips of when he first debuted, and that was quality. But my first memories of Kane was that great Last Man Standing match with Jericho at Armageddon 2000. Really good match. Then moved slowly into the Brothers of Destruction when I first really saw them in 2001, which was quite a really, really good. And then obviously with Kane throughout that sort of marvel, I think it's been obviously. I think he's pulled off everything. I think he's quality everything he does. I mean, his monster promos are quite, I mean, that 2003 storyline when he lost the mask, that was class. His feud with Shane McMahon was like, wow. Mm. I mean, it was generally excitement about, I just couldn't wait for Friday night to watch on Sky Sports Raw when I was a kid. I mean, I don't know why my parents let me watch stuff before getting thrown in fire and what have you. That's another story. Those matches with Shane were class. The whole feud was insane. Then obviously he buried Undertaker alive.
As you do.
Then he's had monster runs. He's had comedy runs, which makes me laugh, obviously.
Team Hell No.
Team Hell No was such a good, that was brilliant.
And the tag matches.
And to be fair, their matches were decent. I mean, I still stand by my favourite Shield match was their first match against Brian Kane and Ryback.
Yeah,
that was quality. But yeah, some of those skits were absolutely hilarious. Just like, what was it, when their performance evaluation? when Dr. Shelley comes in, whatever his name is.
Dr. Shelby.
It's just brilliant. Some of that, and then his monster run as well. Well, then he's of course became Corporate Kane, which I like. He's never been boring, I don't think. Even now, it's still pretty good. I know people obviously don't like the fact that he's beating young up and coming wrestlers by Balor and everyone, but I still think if you can still have a monster like Kane, obviously he's going to go over to Strowman. I think I said that right. Yeah, he's going to lose to Strowman, which is fair enough, and it makes sense. So you need to keep him a heel. You can't just have him come back and lose straight to Strowman. You have to build him up a bit. But even now, it's still good. And his corporate run, his run when he was just with Edward Buford, Seth, when he was corporate, when he was a hit, when he was a monster at the same time, brilliant. So I don't think he's ever been boring. I think he's always had a pretty good angle going on that game. And generally, always been a very... No one's ever looked at his matches and think this is mind-numbingly crap. He's always put on very, very good matches. So his matches with Shane McMahon in 2003 were amazing. His matches with Undertaker in 2010 I enjoyed. They've always been good.
I think for myself, obviously the debut was incredible. Probably
Bad Blood 97.
One of the best WWE debuts this side of Jericho's. And like Nick said, I mean, the matches possibly before his time as a fan, the Undertaker match from WrestleMania 14, the storyline leading up to that was out of this world in terms of how they built it up. Just been a really consistent performer for the longest time. Everything that he's done has been really, you know, really good in one way or another, from his comedy to his, you know, being a monster and stuff. And like Nick said, in terms of coming back this time, you have to build him up, otherwise who's Strowman beating apart from, you know, the name value. So he has to be built up, but he's been built up at the expense of possibly the wrong people, i.e. Balor. But he's one of the most consistent performers on the roster and has been for the longest time. And I really enjoyed the fact that he was, you know, WWE champion for one night, because he was going to be, he was going to set himself on fire, wasn't he, if he didn't if he lost to Stone Cold Steve Austin at King of Ring 98. So that was a pretty cool moment.
You say though about him beating these maybe the wrong people, Balor, I can get that, but then again, who else is he supposed to beat? You can't have him coming in and just beating like Heath Slater or people like, no disrespect to Heath or people like that. Because then again, like, great, he's come back, he's beaten nobody's. At least he's come back and he's actually destroyed very people who are at the top of the roster.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying with that, Nick. I think it's confusing for people outside of, you know, this trio that's speaking now, because of Balor's standing in the company. You know, they've tried to make sure he looked as good as he could, obviously bar elements of this feud with Bray Wyatt, but it makes sense because he wasn't the demon and stuff, and they've kind of kept the demon quite, what's the word, they tried to keep the demon quite, you know, in terms of wins and losses and stuff. So, no, him coming back, and I felt in that match against Balor, Balor had a good showing, really. And it was just ending. So, it's just people reading into it too much, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the first line of his WWE bio kind of sums him up. So Kane is a monstrous abomination that seems to have been extracted directly from your childhood nightmares.
It's a pretty good summary.
I'll quickly go through his titles. So, as you said, he won his one and only WWE title in the first blood match against Stone Cold, which is Stone Cold won back the next day on Raw. He did fairly better with his world title run when he cashed in on Rey Mysterio.
Yep.
In 2010, he had held it for 5 months before losing it to Edge in the Fatal 4-Way. ECW, he beat Chavo in seconds at WrestleMania 24.
The one I was there live for.
Before losing it 3 months later to Mark Henry at Night of Champions in a triple threat match, which also featured Big Show.
Might as well get all the monsters in one match.
Yep. Right, so who do you think's number one?
Great Carly.
Great Carly. Yeah, no idea.
Finley.
Out of a possible 100 points, he got 96.
I'm hoping it's one person I don't want it to be, but carry on.
So at number one, you voted the Phenom himself, The Undertaker.
Yes. What? I've got goosebumps.
No surprises here, I don't think. So, he'll probably be more remembered for his WrestleMania streak than any of his title reigns. But
well, he's the best of all time, isn't he? So, we can just nip that straight into the bud. That, well, certainly the best, biggest wrestler of all time, but probably the best wrestler of all time, best character of all time.
When you talk about adapting, you talk about The Undertaker, aren't you?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's why the longevity's been such. You know, remember the great days of the American Badass.
I love the American Badass gimmick. I don't know why it gets such a bad rap.
No, but I didn't mean that to say.
Keep rolling.
No, I enjoyed that when he came back and it was the end of Judgment Day between Triple H and Rock in the Iron Man match.
Mm.
That was wicked.
So he won his first championship at Survivor Series 91, defeating Hulk Hogan. He would only hold it for 6 days before losing it back to him at this Tuesday in Texas special. He only defended it once at a house show. Do you remember Oliver who he was against? I told you. I told you on the British special.
Bulldog,
yeah. It was 6 long years before he won it again, when he defeated Sting at WrestleMania 3rd. Sting, Sid.
that's wishful thinking.
Yeah. Defeated Sid at WrestleMania 13. He'd lose it to Bret Hart at SummerSlam that year, which would lead to the screw job at the Survivor Series.
Yep.
His third reign came during the Attitude Era, where the title's a bit of a hot potato, so he defeated Stone Cold over the Edge, and then lost it back to Austin a month later. His fourth and final reigns in 2002 under the American Badass gimmick, where he defeated Hulk Hogan at Backlash. And he lost it to The Rock in a triple threat match at Vengeance, which also included Kurt Angle. He also had 3 world title reigns. He defeated Batista at WrestleMania 23, and he lost it to Edge when he cashed in his Money in the Bank a month later. The next WrestleMania, he won it from Edge. A month later, Vicky Guerrero stripped him of the title for using the Hell's Gate submission, which he deemed too dangerous.
Yeah, I've got to share a personal story from the Undertaker Edge match.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 24, I think you'll probably find this quite funny. I was wearing an Edge t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I was in an Undertaker part of the, the part of the stadium. So that was good. It was fun.
Did you break kayfabe?
Say that again, sorry, Nick.
Did you break kayfabe?
In what way?
Did you mark out and start having to cheer for The Undertaker?
Nah, I was very much Edge.
Did you stay in character with Edge?
Yeah, definitely. Although, in terms of the the t-shirt I was wearing, it was for Edge and Christian, and I've always been more of a Christian fan, but yeah, I supported Edge, even though people around me wanted to kill me. never mind. Still here, live to tell the tale.
His third and final reign came in 2009 when he defeated CM Punk in a Hell in a Cell match.
That's a highly underrated feud.
Yeah.
Brilliant matches. And that's when Undertaker changed his opinion of Punk, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
So, wicked. But when you said that, when you were talking about the WWE title, because I didn't realise at the time you were going to talk about the world title afterwards, I was like, really? His last title run was in 2002?
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I was like, in terms of longevity, no wonder he's been able to be around for so long if he hasn't needed the title and stuff. That would have been incredible if his last title was in 2002.
It was 18 years between his first title and his last title.
Wow.
Yeah, he won the first one in 91. He won his last one in 2009. So, yeah. His last title he'd lose in 2010 in the Elimination Chamber, which was won by Chris Jericho.
Because Shawn Michaels superkicked him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if he's retired this year, he hasn't held the title in 7 years.
No.
Why?
But for them 7 years, he's mainly been Mania driven, hasn't he? So.
Don't make it seem less impressive, Chris.
Right. So what did you think of the top five list overall?
I think it's fair.
I think based on the titles that people won, it's probably fair in that instance, but in terms of like memorable or notable mentions and stuff, Bam Bam Bigelow, I'd like to see where he was placed.
Mm.
He was incredible in, you know, WWE against Bret Hart and stuff, and WCW and ECW run as well against Taz and RVD. I would be interested in where he placed outside of the top five. But yeah, apart from that, I think the top five is how it should be.
Yeah, it was pretty much everybody but two people put Undertaker first, and then everybody else was just in any order. So the other four, between 4, 2, and 7, moved daily, but Undertaker was always top. Alright, so 10 wrestlers qualified. So do you want to know the rest of them? So in 6th place was Kevin Nash. He got 31 points. He just missed out on the top 5. I think he is a 6-time WCW champion.
That's Booker T's big homie.
Yeah. 7th place was Bam Bam Bigelow. He got a lot of love. He only had a 44-day title reign.
Just based on who he was, Chris, in all honesty, like I said, go watch those matches. You know, there's the one in Spain against Bret Hart, and there's obviously the King of Ring final. Based on match quality, he's incredible, right? It was an incredible wrestler to watch.
8th place was Psycho Sid. He got 16 points.
Just for the theme music.
Yeah.
Awesome, the WWE.
9th place was Mark Henry with 10 points.
Somebody gonna get the ass kicked, dog. Somebody gonna get the ass kicked.
He deserves a higher ranking for, you know, the turn on Cena.
Yeah, well.
Out of this world.
That and his Hall of Pain gimmick.
The Hall of Pain gimmick was brilliant. That was meant to be for Brodus Clay. But then Brodus Clay pissed off everyone. So he started dancing, and then he gave that to Mark Henry.
Didn't Brian beat Henry as well?
I think then Theodore Long ran out and stopped the match from happening.
Okay. So it was Henry against Big Show, wasn't it? And then Brian ran out.
On Big Show, yeah.
Yeah, on Big Show, okay.
Which brought us when Brian turned heel, but then the fans effectively turned him back face after losing in 10 seconds to Sheamus.
So any guesses who came last at 0 points?
Great Khali.
Great Khali, yeah.
Dumbass.
Yeah, nobody put him in the top 5.
He's a hero in his homeland.
Yeah, I heard that they used to edit SmackDown to make him look like the good guy in India.
Because he was?
Yeah.
They do the same now with Jinder Mahal.
No, because he's Canadian. They don't care about him in India. Alright, so thanks again for everyone who sent in their top 5. So that was a very enjoyable list. I'm sure we'll do more of them in the future when we don't have a pay-per-view on. So...
You know, nobody likes partying more than the Rockers, but the party's over when you start smoking.
That's right, rocking and rolling, strutting and strolling doesn't include smoking. Be a survivor.
Don't smoke.
So we'll finish with our quick predictions for NXT War Games. So the first match been confirmed is Aleister Black versus the Velveteen Dream.
The build up to this match has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Really, really well done. You talk about a simplistic storyline from week to week and stuff. It's brilliantly done. Really well done. Anything, Nick?
So you said Aleister Black, right?
Aleister Black versus the Velveteen Dream.
Yeah, no, I think it's been, you hit the nail on the head. It's been a great build up. Should be a great match. I think Aleister Black will win.
I think, yeah, Aleister Black has to win.
I think it'll be, I hope he becomes NXT champion by a takeover.
I want them to build Aleister Black versus Adam Cole at the WrestleMania weekend. I want that to be the progression.
Yeah, same.
So then next up is the Fatal 4-Way for the vacant NXT Women's Championship. It's Ember Moon versus Kairi Sane versus Nikki Cross versus Peyton Royce. Nick?
I think Ember Moon will win, but I want Nikki Cross to win.
I'd love for Nikki Cross.
I think it's time for Peyton Royce to be the new Australian. I put my fandom behind.
I just can't see who she'll pin.
Yeah, but the iconic duo has been one of the best things on NXT, hasn't it?
Yeah, they were hilarious last week when Kairi Sane came up to them. So, why is she pointing your elbow at you? I'd love Peyton Royce to win. I just can't see who she'll beat.
I think everything points to Kairi Sane winning it, doesn't it, really? Hmm. You would imagine. But everyone in that match deserves to be in it, don't they, really? So it's a difficult one to call.
Yeah, definitely. And then it's War Games, the Officer Payne and Roderick Strong versus Sanity versus the Undisputed Era. I'm not quite sure how they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to start with three people, start with two people. They haven't explained the rules properly yet.
I think they did it on WWE.com.
Did they?
If I remember correctly. It's probably going to start, I think it starts with three, and then, I don't know 100%, so I'm not going to say. I would imagine it starts with three, and then, you know, so on and so forth, but I might be wrong. I still don't understand. I haven't seen NXT from last week, to be fair, but I still don't understand why Roderick Strong's with Orphans for Pain. Has that been explained?
Yeah, if you don't mind spoilers from last week, it was Orphans of Pain versus Sanity in a rematch of the title. The end of the match, the Undisputed Era came and out and interfered in the match.
Yeah.
And then Roderick Strong came out, Undisputed Era gave him an armband, he put it on, thinking he was going to join them, and then he attacked the Undisputed Era.
Okay.
And then William Regal came out and announced War Games.
Okay.
Which was very spur of the moment, but they had the graphics ready.
Yeah, but...
within seconds.
And I understand him attacking Undisputed Era, but why is he with Orphans of Pain?
Because they needed a third member to be in this match.
that must be the only reason, then.
He came out to help the Authors of Pain.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
Yeah. So, who do you think will win?
The Undisputed Era.
Do you think Roger Strong's going to join them?
Yeah.
Rumours that Donovan Dijak might make his debut and join them as well. I think he's going on to Chris Dijak.
You know what I think would be pretty cool? I don't know if they've been released yet, because there's been talk that Gallows and Anderson are actually on their way out. I think that would be pretty cool if they showed up.
Yeah.
They never actually had an NXT run, and they're not going anywhere on Raw at the moment. I think it would be cool if they rocked up at NXT and joined the Undisputed Era. I think it would be a dark idea, but they're not getting anywhere on Raw, are they, at the moment? They never had an NXT run, so it'd be quite good if they get an NXT run, then they could go on to the main roster and be brilliant. And they're not exactly veterans, aren't they? So I don't know with some, but it's not like they'll self struggle NXT or struggle to get back into the main roster or anything like that.
No. That could be fun. Yeah. Next
is NXT needs tag teams.
It does. I was really excited about Heavy Machinery, but they've gone off the boil recently. And the Ely brothers look interesting, but then they lose every match. So.
What do you think of the Street Profits?
They're fun. My son loves them. But it's only so far a gimmick like that goes. So. They could either turn into like a rip off of New Day, or they could go down the crime time route. It's, I don't know which way they're gonna go.
I was thinking it would be more crime time route, wouldn't it?
Right, NXT Championship, Drew. I still won't call him Galloway. McIntyre versus Andre Cien Almas. Still need to get rid of one of the names.
I think Andrade Cien Almas has had one of the best career reinventions in recent times. In all honesty, this is it. Zelina Vega.
Zelina Vega.
Yeah, she's done wonders for his career as well as him turned into a villain. Just amazing, amazing.
I think the whole build-up of him not caring, it's like a good storyline of him. I mean, they lost, he didn't care, to her coming in. I think the whole run has been brilliant. So.
Yeah, and then obviously the matches with Gargano, especially from NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3.
Yeah, that was mine and Nick's favourite match from that NXT, wasn't
that,
it?
So. That was such a unexpected thing, even though you knew how talented both guys were. That was so unexpected, and it was a blow-away match. It was brilliant.
Nick, who do you think's going
to win? I think Drew McIntyre went. I think it's too soon. Yeah, he just won the belt, obviously. But I bet whilst this guy, yeah, he's really, really good. As you said it yourself, there it was my favourite match against Gargano at the last TakeOver. I just think McIntyre needs another win. I'll have McIntyre win. It's too soon.
Sorry.
But an Almas win, though, really opens it up. You talk about Aleister Black and like the Roderick Strongs and so on and so forth. They're not going to go against Drew McIntyre, really, are they? That in terms of how it's presented, it's always hero versus villain. So
yeah, but you could have a rematch between these guys in some sort of stipulation match. Also, you could get the feud going a bit better, and you can have these guys wrestle again at the TakeOver in January.
Well, keep the title on him through to WrestleMania weekend, man.
No, I didn't think of that.
but I understand your logic, Nick.
For some reason I thought there was another, because they threw a random TakeOver and
It's TakeOver in January, isn't it?
They threw a random one in after WrestleMania in Chicago, which was quality.
Yeah.
Which was my favourite TakeOver the whole year, actually.
So far?
funny enough, this was actually the best TakeOver this time last year, wasn't it? When it was DIY versus The Revival in that amazing the 2 out of 3 falls match.
Yeah. No, I think you're... Well...
No, that wasn't that SummerSlam one.
If we're talking current day, you must mean the first match between them at SummerSlam. Not SummerSlam, the NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2.
They won the belts in November last year, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, but we're on like the 7th of November, so...
I meant the November TakeOver, I didn't mean sorry.
Oh, okay.
I hope it will be a great show.
They usually have 5 matches at TakeOvers. Do you think they'll throw another match in? Or do you think the War Games match will be long enough for...
No, that'll be another match, won't they?
And maybe Slater versus Hawkins.
I've got possibly Lars Sullivan versus Ono or Johnny Wrestling.
I've just seen, apparently Johnny, my mate, funny enough, when my phone was making a noise there, my mate texted, apparently it's Johnny Gargano versus Pete Dunne for the UK title, but it's not on the show.
All right.
What?
For the title.
I'm not making it up.
I'm shocked if it isn't going to be on the show.
That's what I thought. It'd be a quality match.
That's got to be on the show, surely.
No, he said his quote was good news. Johnny Gargano's wrestling Pete Dunne at the NXT TakeOver. Bad news, we won't be able to see it because it's not on the broadcast. It's for the live crowd.
Wow. So he's having an ab-off with Shawn Michaels and a title match with Pete Dunne. And we don't get to see... I don't really care about the first one, I suppose. But, yeah. Shocking.
I reckon it'll be Lars Sullivan versus Cassius Ohno. I think they're trying to build something there.
Has he finished with No Way Jose?
Yeah. I forgot about No Way Jose.
No Way
Jose.
Jose.
No Way. One of the best things about the NXT show in Liverpool. Him and Jose and Bobby Roode dancing.
Yeah, right. My son went to that one.
So funny. But yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's the thing when you think of the NXT roster. Once you get past a certain point, it's like it's like what you were saying earlier about, you know, who you take from Impact Wrestling and stuff. There's going to come a point again when they're gonna I guess raid talent, you know, free agents and in the companies and stuff, because we've talked about these matches, and after that, I'm not quite sure who else is available. I'm really surprised that only Lorcan and Danny Burch lost against
Moss and I can't think of his name. What's his name? Sabaroni? No.
Say that again.
Is it Riddick Moss and?
Yeah, Sabatelli.
Sabatelli, I can't think of his name. Then.
Yeah, so surprised they lost in that match the week before last. Yeah, that surprised me, because they're only Lorcan and Danny Burch as a tag team. That's going to be wicked. I'm really looking forward to watching their matches going forward, because the singles matches between them have been some of the best on NXT NXT TV this year. Really enjoyed them.
Right, so you can email us any suggestions for topics you want us to discuss or any questions you want us to answer. Email us at bbgwpod@gmail.com. Hope you enjoyed the show. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at bbgwpod. And huge thanks for listening. And we'll see you at our review of Survivor Series. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.